you want insight and solutions, you're in for a unique experience. One where you're free to ask questions about where you're stuck, ask and hear questions of an everyday variety, global or personal, deep or ancient. All questions are welcome. Any human issue or problem is seen with a new awareness from Patricia's powerful understanding of whole brain thinking. Receive insights you never thought were possible, and be comforted to hear some insights you always knew were right. Discover the profound and the creative value that problems can give us. And now, Patricia's son.
Welcome, welcome to Trust the Problem. Well, my goodness, I guess we've got enough problems always to have something to talk about. But today, actually, what I've decided I'm going to do is I'm going to talk about medicine and healing and the problems that doctors have and the medical profession has and the public has in thinking about healing, and particularly in the context of what I teach, which is that we're in the midst of an evolutionary leap, and that this evolutionary leap is one of consciousness and capacity to perceive, and in fact, our brains are changing, they're evolving, to be able to see more than they used to. And one of the characteristics, one of the classic things I always talk about, which is really relevant to problems that we have, and especially in healing, but any problem that's important to us, one of the places we get most hung up or stuck or diverted or limited or harmed, actually, and one of the reasons why, therefore, of course, we fear problems rather than welcoming them as the source of new knowledge. Obviously, when we have a problem, something's not working, so it means we have to take a new look. We have to respect it. Respect means to re-see. We have to look at the problem again with new eyes, and this causes us to grow. This is our brilliance. This is our genius. This is our intelligence. And years ago, about 300 years ago when I first started teaching, this was my premise, that we're in the midst of an evolutionary leap, our brains are changing, and it had a great deal to do with left brain and right brain, because I really was a pioneer in left brain and right brain, particularly the right brain. People kind of thought of the brain as the left brain, the way the left brain thinks. Logic, sequential thought, right, wrong, black and white, did you or didn't you, will you or won't you, is there a book on it, let me check it out, I want to see what's right. It's grasping and containing and delineating. That's the linear mind. Now, the intuitive mind, the right brain, thinks in pictures and feelings and emotion and has a sense of a whole, has a sense of information and knowledge that logic cannot give you. That's why we call it intuitive. It is the knowledge that just comes. The right brain thinks in a way of letting rather than controlling and grasping. It's the mind that lets brilliance, insight, genius, new ideas, solutions pop into your head. And this is a new style of thinking that we're evolving to, which is to allow that right brain to mature, to have more room in our consciousness to function. And it is, after all, the mind of genius. It's the mind that thinks thoughts never thought before. And the word genius, as I often say, comes from Genesis, which means creation. So what a genius does is create something that never was before. Genius is the capacity to think not only outside the box, but the capacity to really have new thought come into being, a new insight, a new solution. And, of course, this is key when you're trusting problems, is because you know then that the problem is just a signpost. Hey, something to get a new view on. So today, with that sort of little background, what I want to talk about is healing and the nature of healing, and particularly I'll delve a little bit into the dysfunction of our medical systems in modern times, because they really are dysfunctional, and it isn't just the money issue and the HMO bureaucratic issue, though those are two huge problems that are influencing the outcome, because the intention, about 20 years ago I did some workshops called The Power of Intention, and what our intention is lines up our mind, opens the right brain to seek a solution to the problem you're presenting, and your intention is what presents the problem. If your intention is just to make money and look right and be cool and gain fame, then all of your intellect, your intuition, your every part of you is really always screening for what will deliver that. And that's why we're so crippled. It's why we are so decadent, decaying, falling apart, because we've lost the meaning of relevance and values, and we use the word values in such a corrupt way these days. It's like a shorthand, if I'm right, you're wrong, my way is right, your way is wrong kind of mentality. And value is a deeper, powerful, earnest quality when it is aligned with that which is wholesome or that which is greater, which would be a religious sense, but religion in the sense of the ancient root meaning of the word, the link to that which is greater, not necessarily dogmas and political organizations that call themselves religions. There is a true human nature, quality, ability, experience to link to that which is greater, and a desire to do that. And that's the guide to our enlightenment. That's the guide to our choices. And when our intent is aligned with that, then it's not about winning or controlling or getting fame or money. It's not that you can't get fame or money or influence people. That isn't per se wrong, but it is wrong if that's your intent. That'll be a side effect. Your intent has to be to do what is wholesome. And this is the challenge of our time. This is the new style thinking, is what I call it, that we're into the evolution of a new style of thinking. And we are evolving from Homo sapiens to Homo creatus. And first we know, and then we create. And to create, to truly create, and to not be just aberrant, and be sort of a kind of decadent intellect run amok, a technology run amok, science run amok, religions run amok, whatever. To have it not be that way requires heart, it requires wholesomeness, it requires compassion, empathy, earnestness, goodwill, and that is the quality of linking to that which is greater. Because when you link to that which is greater, when you have that kind of open-minded, open-hearted quality, you get flashes of insight that are not only outside the box, they are outside the box in the direction you need to be going. And this is what's missing so much in our culture, in our world right now. And the good news is that it's a real problem that it's missing. It's causing more and more destruction and, you know, almost a dissolution of our country. And it's bankrupting us. It's causing us to be in wars. It's really devastating much of the hard-earned, evolved work of the past, because people are thinking in old-style thinking in a reactionary way, in a simplistic way, and they're not trusting the problems. They're seeing problems as something that just needs to be stamped out by domination, which, of course, only creates a huge mess and backlash that is a huge problem in itself, which then has to set us back into reflection, back into reassessment, back into looking at what works and what doesn't work. And so all of this is true in medicine and healing. All of this is the backdrop, so to speak, in which doctors go to medical school, practice, business. So many people I know who are earnest, wonderful doctors, are almost not practicing medicine. I mean, it is so difficult to join an HMO or something which really is just a business and uses propaganda and advertising and focus groups and says all the right words and makes a token stab at some of the right directions, but it is not the agenda. It is not the goal. So that's one problem. But then just you, as a person, as a patient, as someone who, I always love the names they call people, I have to call doctors patients, because you sure do have to have patience. But anyway, there's been some illness in my family, and I've been dealing more with doctors than ever before, and I usually just teach at holistic health conferences and so on, but the whole idea that the patient doesn't know anything, the doctor is the authority, and that they have now available to them, especially for certain illnesses, nothing but drugs. And you might as well talk to a computer. You don't even need a person. You present your symptoms, the computer will say, you have this, take these five drugs. Or these five drugs, or these five drugs, or these five drugs, or any combination of these drugs. And that's what you get when you go doctor shopping for certain diseases and heart disease and things like that. There's just drugs or operations. And that's because we're so mechanically left-brained oriented, dominating, control, trying to just stomp it out or take it out or poison it, but very little thought to the true nature of healing, which, when I say true nature of healing, I mean those words very specifically. That's true, and it's the nature of healing. The nature of healing is very much our own body doing it. And I've taught many, many people who are now in the healing profession, and I have been a healer basically all my life. I haven't walked around with that label. I remember once years ago I was interviewed in the Chronicle, and they said, well, would you describe yourself as a psychic? And I use this, you could put in healer too now. I said, well, I drive a car very well, as a matter of fact, but I don't go around calling myself a driver. You know, it is part of who I am, and it's part of what I do, and you know, I'm sure some people drive better than others, and so I do have abilities that I guess people call psychic, and I certainly do healing to myself and to others, and I teach it, but not in the medical model. In the model much more of Eastern thought, that it's energetic, that there are patterns of energy, and that what you eat and how you live, and above all, that the body, from my point of view now, is sort of like a battery. It can hold different organs and different areas of the body can hold emotional charges that are too overwhelming and devastating to be processed at the time we first experience them, which of course is often in childhood. And with interactions with people even after childhood that are traumatizing, where you feel powerless, where it's devastating, where your mind cannot handle it. It is overwhelming. And when things like that happen, the mind protects itself by going into shock, by sealing off, sometimes forgetting, putting things aside, making you numb. But the body records it. It keeps it like a battery. And it's interesting to me, years before Louise Hay used to, I know she thanked me one time for my workshops on the healing and words. And one of the things, I never went as far as giving everything such a defined explanation, but certainly I remember it just came to me when I was working with people. I would look at people and I would see it just struck me as so unusual that what we held energy, for instance, if you had problems communicating, if there was some threat or some danger about speaking or being, or expressing yourself, not always just with words, but expressing yourself, it would often, the charge would be held in the throat or the mouth or the ears or the nose or the neck. And shoulders were shouldering responsibility, and the heart was loving, and being injured when you love, many aspects of it. Lungs had to do with inspiration and breathing in spirit, and it's interesting that the lungs and the heart are so close together, because one of the ways you heal your heart is by being inspired. And to consciously choose to create inspiration in your own mind, in your own body, in your own thoughts. And this is part of energetic healing, if that's what you do. And, you know, if you have arthritis in your hands, sometimes it's because there's a rigidity and a difficulty in what you create in the world, your hands representing that, your feet, groundedness, or where your legs, where you're walking, the direction you're taking, your digestive system, assimilating the world and keeping what's good for you, letting go of what's not good for you, the power center. And long before I ever had heard of chakras, I started having these intuitive hits when I was working. I did family counseling some 35 years ago, and when I was doing it, I was reading people, basically, I guess the way we'd say it today, and different parts of their body sort of revealed psychological stress to me. And then I, as a counselor, family counselor, I would work on what I was seeing and what they were telling me about maybe where they had physical problems. So that started it, this odd thing that our body has a metaphorical relationship to energy, and we hold it in different parts of the body to be processed later when we're stronger and when we're more integrated or older. And this kind of thinking is considered like fairy tale, practically, I think, for most doctors. In fact, much worse than that, they fear it greatly. And I think they fear it because they know, now I'm speaking in generalities, because thank goodness I do know a number of doctors who are wonderful and who don't do this, and I'm sure there's many doctors who sometimes are aware and in certain areas aware, and then in other areas closed-minded and defended, and that's the human condition, isn't it? It's in everything. It's in all forms of work. But today I'm trying to talk about medicine and healing and how it fits into this evolutionary leap and this new style of thinking, and how it is important to trust the problem that we have in our medical system right now, and to think more for ourselves, to think more metaphorically. Recently, I had occasion to note how closed-minded so many doctors are, and fearful, really defensive and fearful, and get angry if you even suggest a possible other way of looking at it. And I mentioned this to a doctor that I encountered along the trail there of these different doctors. And he was a young Asian doctor who was wonderful. And he said, well, I think I've mentioned this before, but it's worth mentioning again. He said, if you think of medicine as different forms like X, Y, and Z, and American modern medicine only knows about X, they know Y and Z exist, but they don't know anything really about them, or very little. And so when you bring up, and different doctors know that some parts of Y and Z work, but it does not fit their model. They don't know where to put it in, and so it's very unsettling. So he said some doctors get very defensive, very angry, and very upset because you're bringing up these Y and Z models that they don't know about, that they feel inadequate about. And he even said, you know, and I do. He said, I know they exist, I know they work, I know they have aspects that work, but I don't know why, and it doesn't fit with my training. Now, that's a person of integrity, that's a person with an open mind. And when you know other ways exist, and you're not defended psychologically into demonizing them, or denying them, or punishing patients who want to be treated in that way, then you, when you're not doing that, then you are in the position to learn through the problems that will be presented that you really perhaps don't have the best solution for. I think I've mentioned this before too. I think of Ariel Sharon, who had a mild stroke, and then the doctors gave him a very strong blood thinner, and he had a hemorrhagic stroke, which basically has killed him. I mean, I know he's still in a coma, but they really did him in. And I remember Sanjay Gupta came on TV and very bluntly and almost as though he couldn't help but just blurted out. He said, well, the second massive stroke was brought on by the medication, that they gave him. And this other doctor that I was just talking about said something about, you know, he knows that with certain people, you know, this syringe with this medication at the time of a stroke can either really save them, from damage and help them, or kill them. And he takes a chance each time and he doesn't know. And that's because the use of blood thinners works sometimes to help dissolve a clot, put in the right place, right way, and other times it just kills the patient by causing such a strong reaction of bleeding that the brain is given a hemorrhagic stroke, and it does you in. So to know the details rather than just have rules that you have to be like a child and follow what the doctor says, that you can't reflect on your own nature, you can't use your intuition, you can't know your own body, and dialogue and experiment. This is trusting the problem. This is where modern medicine does not want to go. They want to be the authority. I had a friend who was a marvelous doctor who, when she was in medical school, she went to Harvard, and she was very high up in her class, a very competent woman, and she would question, you know, why are we supposed to use this treatment when we don't know what causes this disease? And they'd look at her like, why are you asking that question? Don't even ask. This is the problem. This is what we've decided is the treatment, and that's what you learn. As though even the doctor is not allowed to think for themselves, not allowed to trust the problem, not allowed to look. Everything with drug companies and insurance companies and HMOs, medical schools and doctors, everything in our culture has evolved towards more and more control with the intention ultimately of making money and having control, and not the intention of healing. The concept of how healing works is terrifying, practically, to most doctors, because it is it's like a sea that they don't know. It's like the diving into the unconscious, and they don't know about it, and they feel unsure, and it is certainly does leave one open to quackery. That kind of thing can happen, and it often does when we're shifting from a power control kind of thinking to one of trying to be more trusting. It just creates a real big vacuum for people who want power and attention, and they are quacks, but because their intent is that they just want the attention and the importance, they will get very fixated on things. And I know, like, for instance, when I was going to University of California, and I had written a paper on the psychology of childbirth and how we shifted from just knocking people out and getting cesareans, which is what we're back to, but at the time we were shifting from that to natural childbirth, to creating a good place for women to have babies and to understand their bodies and to pay more attention to the needs of each particular woman and what was going on. And when I was doing research to write this paper at one of the best universities and one of the best libraries probably in the world at the University of California, Berkeley. And when I went to the medical section in the bibliography and of the librarians there, there's a warning not to let people who aren't in medical school or doctors to read the material. And in the old Hippocratic Oath, one of the things you made an oath to do was to inform people, to help them understand, to teach people, to teach anyone who asked you how any bit of knowledge you had that was helpful to them that they wanted to know, that you were supposed to do that. And they changed it not to teach medicine to other people. Your physician is not supposed to, what they call it, half-educate. As though you could whole-educate in medical school, and as if that happens, it's also silly. And it's patronizing, and it doesn't allow the patient or citizen or human being the respect that you don't know everything, and you may have a piece missing, and if somebody offers this and says it's helpful, you consider it, you look at it, and you digest it the way we have to digest everything. So in an effort to prevent quacks, people are not, they made a clique, they made a guild, they made a power group that only doctors could be licensed, and that you can't practice medicine without a license. You can't know anything if you don't have a license. And so many doctors, as so many things, not just doctors, from carpenters to electricians to whatever, so many things, you get a license. Sometimes it's a license to practice badly because you just have to pass certain tests, but you don't necessarily have to really have a good skill. And there are people who have good skills and have not passed the tests and don't have the license. So what does it always boil down to? It boils down to paying attention and looking and choosing and thinking for yourself and creating. I mean, we need to put people in uniforms, whether it's doctor's uniforms or police uniforms or judge's uniforms or military uniforms. We need to uniform people to give them designated power, because we aren't allowed in moments of crisis to think. We have to follow the rules of the people in the uniform. But that gives judges the power to abuse, police the power to abuse, doctors the power to abuse, etc. So it has it's always a two-edged sword, and that's because of absolute thinking. You could certainly have a sign that says, I've studied medicine, and I belong to this association or that. That would all be fine. But there's so much control mentality out there now, down to making an amendment to the Constitution, not to burn the flag, and things that are small topics. People do this in their arguing. They find issues which they can argue about to avoid the bigger picture of their fear, of their not knowing, of their being earnest and honest and relating, and wanting to distract the attention from them out to somebody else. This is the cause of so much dysfunction. And until we understand that, it makes it very difficult to trust problems, because problems require our openness. They require our goodwill, our good intent to solve it, and not just to dominate somebody or have control or to just not have to look at something. So this is a big piece of our medicine and healing. But I want to get back to the beautiful part of healing that is often left out. And what's left out, the beautiful part that's left out, is the energetic nature of healing. And if I get to say nothing else more today than to say, I think singularly one of the most powerful things you can do to heal yourself, and this can sound so corny, it could be so hokey, but on the other hand, if you can feel it deeply, or if you can change the metaphor to one that works for you and feels deeply, because it's the deep feeling that makes it work. If you could create a metaphorical image, an image for your intuitive mind to use, because the intuitive mind really governs the immune system. And when we live in fear and we devitalize we make impotent the intuitive mind, or we make the intuitive mind filled with fears and images of fear and loss, and that you have to do it this way or that way, then we harm ourselves. But if you use the intuitive mind at its most mature level, which is inspiration and visual and imagery, a kind of gestalt that you can feel in your body, this is the secret to healing energetically. And one of the ones images that I use for other people, even sometimes I don't even tell them, I don't even have to say it, I just feel it, especially when there's a difficult case. Sometimes something is not, sometimes it's very straightforward to me energetically, I feel it and I just have an automatic response and that's the antidote, so it works fine. But especially when I'm not sure, or it's very big, or something we shouldn't micromanage, that it's so big that we need to, I guess honestly the way it says, give it back to the hands of God and let the bigger view, the higher order of things, which can know solutions and the nature of the problem bigger than you can even present it. And you want to be able to tap that power. So the image that I often use is the gold white light. And it's often like a sphere of light. And I just put it into the place, the organ that is holding the injury or the energy or the emotion or has the symptom. So if you put this image, and you can divide it up into little pieces, you can make it a huge big sphere that's just, you know, it extends 3 feet all around you, and you're right in the middle, so it's all of you. You can turn it into, sometimes when it's really hard for people to imagine, it's because they have so much negative fear thinking already compacted into the body. And so it's very hard to imagine it healthy and to imagine it well and radiant and beautiful, because the logical mind says, no, it isn't, it's not. And so it makes it very hard. And the logical mind is there to keep track of facts accurately and honestly. But part of keeping track of facts honestly is to say, this is where the injury is, and this is where the light and the healing is needed. Not that it's not possible, but this is where it's needed. And then the intuitive mind is free to use the logic's delineating capacity to not exactly focus, but line up in the right place. And the light image is one ancient image of healing, of surrender to the radiance of heaven, of God, of spirit, of, you use the language from whatever culture, the highest order of beauty and alignment in nature, in heaven, in holiness, in goodness, is so often a light. And I don't think it's an accident that this is archetypal. I think it's somewhat hardwired into us. I think it's part of some reality also that we have many language descriptions for, but in different religions and in different cultures and in different ways. But nonetheless, it all comes to come down to this. So, if it's hard, as I started to say, if you find it difficult to heal something, let's say you have painful menstrual cramps, or you have a headache, or whatever, to begin, or a heart problem, what you would do is you'd begin to imagine this gold white light there. Now, sometimes when I tell people to do this or to try it, they say, I can't. I just can't imagine it. There's too much, I don't want to say negativity, but it's sort of that. There's too much belief system already that is why you have the disease or the problem. That is too hurt, too too involved with the hurt. So it's taking up sort of all the space in the body, in the thoughts, in the emotions. So what I've found that is helpful is to imagine a light as profound as a star, as huge as a star, as a radiant star, a holy star, a healing star, and compact it down to about the size of a small diamond. And then take that tiny little point, as tiny as you need to make it, or as big as you can make it, and put it right in the center of wherever you're injured, wherever your body is holding that emotion or that negativity. And put that little light in there and visualize it and feel it as bright and as big as you possibly can. Sometimes it helps very much to breathe into that area, and that fills, that helps the light grow. The inspiration, the breath, the breathing in brings the withdrawal of consciousness out of our state and the entering into consciousness into our state by this visualization. This is the power of the intuitive mind, that thinks in pictures, imagery, metaphor, spatial holes. It is divine inspiration. It is the mind of religious experience, not religious dogma. That's the rules and the judgmental stuff. This is just the radiant place. And so as we imagine that light and we bring it into wherever we feel an injury, or we suggest to others who are, say, praying for someone who's ill, you help by imagining it for them. Perhaps they are so caught up in it, it's hard for them to imagine. Or if they are imagining it, and it just helps them more. So it's a simple thing, and again, it is easier to do when it's not your problem. Therefore, it's a very powerful way to help someone else, which is a way of training your own brain and your own mind to have access to this power, so that when you do need it, you've already been there, done that, and it doesn't feel so alien or so impossible. And especially notable is when we do this, we actually begin to see that it works. And that then is a logical, linear thing for the mind to keep track of. Oh, and sometimes this works. Now, sometimes it doesn't because of many reasons, point, counterpoints going on. But I find it never hurts, and it always helps. And what could there be in medicine that never hurts and always helps? It may not always cure, but it always improves things, helps things evolve to the next step where they could cure or insights could come. So it's immensely powerful, immensely, and very necessary. So this is our next piece. This is our evolutionary leap, coming into being by our creative use of our own intuition. And it is the missing ingredient in healing and in medicine and in medical dogma and doctrine. The fact that they finally admitted there is an immune system, which is a very mystical statement, actually. They try to say it in words like system, which don't sound so metaphysical, but it's totally a mystical thing. They don't know what it is. They don't know what makes it work. They don't know what it is. But I just told you what it is. It's the right brain, intelligence, and connection to all that is, that we can actualize in our own unfolding and life-evolving existence. And we can bring it into situations that quickens the, quote, immune system, that makes it awaken. You know, they don't know why there are spontaneous remissions is why. It doesn't mean the person necessarily thought of a cold white light, as I'm suggesting, but in their personal process, at some level, they digested the energetic deadlock, the energetic injury. They began to process it in their struggle of dealing with the problem of being ill or whatever it is that they had. And one thing I always like to impress with people is anytime you've been ill, from a cold or something serious, doesn't matter, anytime you've been ill and you've gotten better, you healed yourself. The fact that we do most of it unconsciously doesn't mean that we didn't do it. And when other people help us, their help supports us so we can do it. So it's a funny paradox. As a healer, you recognize that what you're doing is helpful. It is healing. And I used to, when I first was evolving into healing and understanding it, and my whole philosophy of either-or thinking and how it gets us into such trouble, it's what deadlocks these inabilities to accept other points of view simultaneously that seem opposite to what we're holding or someone else holds. Being able to hold the paradox is essential. It's part of this next level of thinking. So in terms of being a healer and being healed, one of the things I realized is 100% the healer contributes to the healing, and 100% the person heals themselves. And when you can see how that can be true, it isn't who has the power, who controlled it, who made it happen. It is the true nature of being human is that we're related to one another, we're related to life, all life, we're related to God or the unfolding of the universe, we're related to everything. And when we expand that relationship in a way that is of a high order, of a goodwill, acknowledging the need to heal injury, we get well. That's what healing is. And whether you're just understanding hygiene and keeping things clean, which is an incredibly important part of healing many things, of eating well, of being loved, of taking good care of people. And I used to always think of, you know, hospitals as being such an unhealthy place to be. And indeed, all the statistics, I don't have any in front of me now, but I've read them and heard them through the last few years. You know, so many people get killed in hospitals. It's a really dangerous place to be. Infections, and getting the wrong medicines, and just basically not the warmest, most nurturing place to be. And the fact that often, thank God not always, but often our loved ones are not allowed to be there, they have to leave. If somebody loves you and they are with you, they help you. They help you heal, because when you feel love for someone, it helps them align to this higher place. And I wrote a chapter in a book on healing people actually when they die. And one of the pull-ups that they use, a quote, I don't have it in front of me, but it was basically that the same energy that you use to heal someone of an illness is exactly the same energy you use to help them die well. So there's no either-or-ness. You have to do this, it'll make it better. You do this, it'll make it worse. In the intuitive mind, it's the same place. It's great love. It's calm, healing, goodwill, love, radiant light being brought into the being, the body, the spirit, the mind, the emotions, the soul of the person. And when you're imagining that, and you're imagining it visually and energetically with feeling, you are sending it. It is, you have made a pathway that they can feel, that they can find. And usually when you're ill, you're far from the pathway. And often, sometimes we have to get very ill so that the crisis of the illness causes us to seek that pathway. And that's why so many people say, say, you know, their cancer, their heart disease was the greatest thing that ever happened to them. If they survive it, they become more enlightened. They become more aware. They have more value for life, more respect. And this is all part of a bigger thing that we're doing. And today, I've just wanted to put some light on what I consider the biggest missing piece. There's all parts to it. You know, not all medicines and chemicals and drugs are bad. Some are very helpful at the right time. But when done automatically, without tuning into the person, without respect for differences, and most importantly, without respect for the energetic component of healing, they often kill you, like the poor Ariel Sharon. So this kind of thing is the missing piece, the warmth, the love, the meditative state, the radiant energy. I think I've talked about this before, but I remember a very close friend of my son, who they were friends from grammar school, and he was in a motorcycle accident, and first they said he would die, then they said he'd be a vegetable, then they'd say he'd be brain damaged and never come out of the coma, and then he came out of the coma, but then he would be brain damaged forever. And he's just a wonderful man now, and he's different, but he's fine. He's maybe in some ways more fine than he was before the accident, because he's more open. But he, I remember once, I used to go to the hospital, I know I've mentioned this before too, but it fits for today's show, and he, I used to go every day and just run energy, just be in the room with them and run healing energy. And sometimes I'd just rest my hands on his ankles or his feet while he was lying in the bed, and just feel the energy flow up into his injury, which was in his thigh and his head. He had very severe brain injury, head injury. And he actually, on a motorcycle, ran into the back of a truck, which was on the top of crest of a hill, so it was a blind spot, and he was coming up fast, and his bike just rammed right into it, and his helmet rammed into his head, and as he hit the back end of a huge delivery truck. So I remember one day I was doing this, and there's a couple of little things I can say about this. One was I was giving him this healing, holding his, pressing my hands just on his feet. Didn't matter particularly his feet. I wasn't moving them or anything. I was just getting contact with him to send energy into his body. And as I rested my hands on his feet, there was this nurse. And I will mention, one was a white nurse, one was a black nurse, and it culturally fit. So that's why I mention it. But so the white nurse comes in and she says, what are you doing? Don't do that. We don't believe in that. We don't believe in massage. It causes clots. I said, I'm not massaging him. I'm just sending him good energy. And she said, well, don't do it. And she walked out. And I remember thinking, wow, that was a very harsh reaction. You know, kind of like overkill. It betrays the guilt and the fear. So I just, of course, was going to ignore her, and I continued. And then this black nurse came in, and she was folding up blankets and things and going about the room. And she was quiet. I could feel her respect. And I was just standing at the foot of his bed, and just, I suppose I might look like I was meditating, or I don't know what interpretation might someone say by how I looked, but she came over and she says, that'd be real good what you're doing. That'd be real good. That'd be real good what you're doing. And she just nodded her head and walked out. And I thought, what a difference. What a cultural difference between these two people. And it is the ability to be open to spiritual energy and not fear it. And we're not at the end here, but getting near the end. And one of the things that I definitely wanted to bring up was how either-or thinking does us in and keeps us away from that gentle paradox acceptance of one side and the other side, and then one way and another way, so that we keep learning and growing. And to avoid the reactionary, simplistic, black and white thinking that is immature logic. That is the immature logical brain. And it is fear-driven, it's dominating, and it's your way, it's the only way, and this need for control that gets really quite absurd and cruel. And you can see it in so many issues on television, in our culture, in the world, problems that we have, as though we cannot have a thinking process that allows both points of view. As somehow that's dishonest, actually. You'll hear it in a lot of right-wing media. They assume dishonesty if you can see two sides to a question, as though that is duplicitous in the sense that it is a lie, and not see it as a paradox where both sides are true, and that there is an evolution in awareness when you respect that, look again and see what part of this side is true and what part of that side is true. What is the best of this view and what is the best of this other view? And start accentuating and supporting that which is best rather than devolving into fearful polarization that makes you think so simplistically that you start bombing or torturing or imprisoning or judging or disdaining or slandering people who have a different point of view. And what we need to do is point out the differences, look at the differences, see what part of the differences work and what part don't. And that takes open-mindedness. That takes some kind of trust in a bigger picture. And that's the real core of trust the problem, is that when you have a fundamental true trust, you could call it in God or in the natural order of the universe or the higher good involved in the essence of human beings and life itself, when you have that inspiration, whether you're a scientist or a religious practitioner or a politician or a medical person or a teacher or a policeman or a soldier, when you have that position of respect, receive with the purpose of some empathy, it slows you down. And that's why so many that think black and white, that just want fame and money and control and power over others, will never let themselves slow down and have empathy for the other, because they see it as losing. They see it as being thwarted from their ruthlessness, that they are being stopped, and they are. You're being changed as you see the other person's point of view. This is one of the problems in the Middle East, is that each side sees its own wound and plays its own wound, which is huge. Both sides have huge wounds. Tremendous, very sad. Need people from the rest of the world to send them both love, to help them ground, to help them see each other with clearer eyes, to see that it's important not to be the harmer. And that doesn't mean go around, be the victim, and get harmed. It means speak up about it. It means find ways to bring it out, but not by becoming what you resist. And whenever we hate, we become what we resist. And this is an ancient Chinese proverb, that everyone you meet is your mirror, and you become what you resist. These are two powerful 5,000-year-old proverbs, and they each give us the tool for healing, for growing, for transforming. And this is what the evolutionary leap is about. This is what trusting the problem is about. This is what we are all evolving to do, and we're learning through the problems of our daily lives and through our illnesses and through diseases and through problems, Sometimes, of course, it just seems awful. It just seems too much. But whenever it's too much, it usually means something has gone on too long. And it doesn't always mean that you let it go on too long. It means humanity has let it go on too long. And you may be being the human being that has taken on this moment in time to start processing that piece of humanity's fear. So you don't have to be thinking of it in terms of blame or it's your fault. This is all the old style thinking. And this either you're for us or against us thinking is so destructive. It's primitive. It's inaccurate. It causes you to be simplistic and it causes more harm. It always ends in war and violence and cruelty. It escalates and escalates, harming the innocent all along the way. That's why war itself is a failure of human intelligence, because it is the failure to see when the issue is smaller, how to respectfully heal it. So healing is not just physical healing, though it always affects us physically. And that's why the medical profession has such a problem. You know, they're so specialized, and you see how one illness is related to another, maybe causes it even. You try to bring that up to the medical doctor specialist. He says, well, I don't want to talk about that. I don't want to talk about this. That's not what I do. And they will not even listen. They feel fearful. This is all too common. All too common. And it is time for us to calm down, to trust the problem, to see that there's more to everything. And most importantly, that we have what is, I guess, modern medicine call magical, and it feels kind of magical, but it's spiritual. It's real. It's divine. It's numinous. Numinous is my favorite word. It's that presence of holiness, of the more of everything. And when we bring that quality into ourselves as we minister to someone else, or as we try to heal ourselves or take care of our children or teach something, the more we bring that quality into us, the more what I just recently did a workshop in Southern California, and I got a wonderful letter from the director who had put the programming together, and she said, we could feel your aura to the back of the room. It affected everyone. Well, what that is that it's that presence, it's that energy. And that is what is missing in our healing and in our thinking and in our trust and in our problem solving. And it instantly takes us out of the stressful place and puts us into the mind-opening, transformative, creative place. Whether it's a physical healing, an emotional or psychological, spiritual, or collective one.
What is it?
So this is the evolutionary leap. This is how we heal. And this is where we're going. This is our next step. And it is radiant. It is your choice. You can find it. You can remember one time when you had it. And if you have trouble remembering one time when you had it, imagine what it would be like if you did have it. You know, listen to people like me, listen to tapes, find that energy and recreate it yourself. Cultivate it. This is how we heal. This is the next level of being. We are truly all over this planet in the midst of an evolutionary leap. Had a premonition of it 35 years ago. It's unfolding now. People in every walk of life sense it. Be part of it. Heal. With much love, this is Patricia Sun.
You've been listening to Trust the Problem with Patricia Sun. This program and its content is copywritten to Patricia Sun, all rights reserved, 2006.